Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
This crowd was singing High Hopes. Smiling through a broken nose. Oh, High Hopes. High Hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo, it is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. James Seltzer and maybe a touch less minor league info today. Our guy Tucker Bagley. Tuck, what up, pal?
Yeah, I didn't even think about checking the minors.
I know.
I should have.
See? I know.
I should have. I've had all day.
We're going to give everyone a day off. It'll be beautiful. So we had a nice quick pod because we are previewing tonight's Field of Dreams game. Shout out, among other things, of course. But tonight, La Scala's Fire in the Northeast. Fritz and I, 7:30, baseball movie trivia to win Phillies tickets. The event is on. So here's the deal, because I know that there is potential rain out in Iowa. It's raining now, whatever. Here's the deal. If the game gets canceled, the event is off. If it doesn't, we will be there. That's it. Full stop. We are planning to be there. We are planning. Fritz and I have already discussed our timing to get out there, the whole thing. Like, so we're going. It's happening. Be there. If perchance the game does get canceled, obviously the event will be canceled. But I do not think that's going to happen. I think they're going to force this one in tonight. It doesn't look great tomorrow either. They're going to play the Field of Dreams game. So coming out with us tonight, La Scala's Fire in the Northeast. It's going to be awesome. Such a cool place. Great food, great drinks, great prizes, great trivia, great hang. So coming out. All right, Tuck, let's look back on the series a little bit.
Yeah. Do we have to?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Where are you at with this Phillies team? We haven't gotten your thoughts, you know, all the time. You know, you chime in here and there. But it is, look, we could say today, and technically they are tied with the Diamondbacks, but they are 1-2 against the Diamondbacks today, August 13th, the first time we've woken up in months. Where if the season ended right now, the Phillies would not be in the playoff. It has been a precipitous decline. Only a month ago, we were at the All-Star break, and the Phillies were two games back of the Braves, and we were all feeling pretty damn good about it. It has been real quick to get us to this low point, the second low point, third low point of the season. I don't know where we're at. How are you feeling, Ty?
Yeah, not great. I mean, I think they've lost six of the eight series they've played since the All-Star break. Not ideal. And they just look exhausted, right? Like, I felt that way leading up to the trade deadline. And I think it was Jack who said, like, you know, just get to the trade deadline, get some reinforcements, and then we'll kind of take it from there. Well, we did that. We got the reinforcements, or at least one. I don't know how well you can say about the relievers they got, but you got your reinforcement. Like the big swings have been taken. This is your team, for better or worse, for the next 7 weeks. And they look exhausted again, right? And maybe it's because they're an older team. Maybe they just don't have it in them, but you know, I tweeted this morning, and I kind of think it's true. You know, the first quarter of the season, they're the worst team in baseball. Second quarter of the season, they're probably the best team in baseball. And now the third quarter of the season, they've been the most mediocre.
So we hope the fourth it flips around.
So, like,
the other.
Who knows what we get? Like, there's 40 games left. Who knows what they are? But I mean, at this point, you just watch them, and it's exhausting for me to watch.
It is.
And you know, the mental gymnastics they have to do to get all these guys on the field, because you want Alec Boehm's bat in the lineup. The fact that Bryce Harper says, well, my knee's fine unless I'm playing right field, and then it's really sore. That's what really, really hurts it. And, you know, the guys that you've expected to kind of step up and play well just haven't really done so in the last month. Like, Kyle Schwarber is 2-home-run game, but hasn't done much outside of that. Bryce Harper's been fine. Brandon Marsh was an all-star, but he's looked like, you know, first half of 2024 Brandon Marsh, really, you know, since the all-star break. So, kind of look at this team and how uneven the the lineup is, the bullpen just looks exhausted outside of Duran. Like, I just don't trust anybody in a big spot right now because they've all been worked to death because they had to climb out of that 9-19 hole and they haven't had a lot of big wins, right? Like, most of their wins come in high leverage situations. They had the most one run wins in baseball. And then even the rotation, right? Like, you could at least bank on, hey, we're winning Wheeler, Sanchez, Lizardo starts, and who knows when Painter, Nola, whoever else gets the other two, but you're not even doing that now. Like, Wheeler's ERA, I think, is close to 4 in his last 6 starts. Sanchez is up there too, although that's inflated because of the Royals start. He hasn't been as bad as that numbers indicate because of that outlier start. But even the guys that you counted on for when this team clawed their way back into the playoffs and clawed their way back to really their high point of the season at the beginning of July, they aren't really playing their best baseball either. And I just don't know where you turn for this team right now.
Well, I mean, the only hope is that they get hot at that and sneak into the playoffs and make a run. I mean, 2022, even though I think that was a better baseball team than this one, I think is the formula in terms of, I mean, I think, you know, as we remember that 2022 team so fondly and that run so fondly, but with a week left in the season, we didn't know if they were going to make the playoffs. A lot of people actually hated the team. I remember Joe and John saying they shouldn't celebrate if they do make the playoffs because they haven't like earned it.
Yeah, I mean, they made it because the Marlins swept the Brewers, right?
Exactly.
Like and I bought my Mike Piazza Marlins jersey as celebration for the Marlins letting the Phillies into the postseason.
The Brewers gave it to them as much as the Phillies took it. And then it was the best run of this, you know, 5-year thing. So I think you just have to hope that they get there and their aces are, you know, to the point you made, it's been an up and down season. Maybe it's an up. I saw someone, I think it was like John Clark or someone tweet in 2024, they were the best team in baseball till London and London ruined it. Maybe it's the opposite here and the Field of Dreams game sets them off. But yeah, it does feel, it just feels like you're grasping at straws. It feels like, again, the only hope they have is maybe they can get hot at the right time. And that's a ridiculous way to hope for a baseball team. I think.
But isn't that what you're hoping for anyway? Right, like course, even if they were on pace to win 95 games, like
of course
that would if you were a pessimist.
But I think
that
the
would
bigger
be
issue
your,
now
your
is thought. I don't think they're a lock to make the playoffs. Like I don't, and then on top of that, if they do make the playoffs in the 5 or the 6 seed, which is what it will almost definitely be at this spot, I mean you're talking about playing the Braves or the Cubs in their stadium to start, and both those teams are way better than the Phillies, and that's not even talking about the Dodgers, the Brewers, or whoever's coming in that next round. So, it just seems like a tall order for them to get hot. I just don't think they have the pieces. I don't think they have the guys. I don't think they have the arms in the bullpen. I don't think they, and to your point, I mean, the way this team has been managed this year, and it's really been the offseason coming in. I mean, I gave them an F- for their offseason on the morning show. And it was, you know, a lot of people agreed. A lot of people didn't. I mean, vindicated. I mean, what a disastrous offseason they had, just as we thought. Yes, the only argument against not being enough of an offseason was they could have not signed Schwarber and JT. Like, I guess, but there's an argument to be made with how this plays out that, like, maybe they should have reset at that point. We don't know. We'll see how this goes and stuff, but I certainly think there's an argument to say that they shouldn't have traded for Rise. They shouldn't have made these kind of half-measure type moves, especially if they're going to change up their entire defensive alignment for it to keep freaking Alec Bohm on the field. I mean, this team is just run so poorly right now. Like they feel like they are run poorly. And it is both off the field in the moves they make and how they make. I mean, going back to the offseason, the Bo Bichette thing, like we forget because Bo Bichette hasn't been very good, but they were pantsed in that situation from an organizational perspective. I mean, they got used and abused in that situation. The Mets swooped in. The Phillies were like, we got him, guys. Tell everyone in the media, he's coming here. Get our fans excited. And then, boom, it goes the other way. There's no backup plan. Let's just bring Bohm and JT back. That was the freaking backup plan. JT and Bohm, two guys. And JT is valuable defensively. I know he is, and he's been better offensively. Like, I don't much more know with Bohm. But, like, two guys who you absolutely can't trust to give you a hit in the playoffs as a right-handed bat, which is what this desperately this team needs. The offseason, they have no plan B, no real way of going about things. It's either Bichette or we just re-rack it, which everyone said is the worst possible thing you could do with this group, and they did. And then they come in the year, they wait around for the manager to get fired or whatever, then go on a bit of a run, and now we're right back where we were, to the point where it's like we did a poll on the morning show, Tucker, yesterday. Who's a better Phillies manager, Rob Thompson or Don Mattingly? And Rob Thompson went with 67% of the vote. It wasn't even close. And this is a guy who people were like yelling to get out of here. I agree with the poll. Like if I had a team, I would take Rob Thompson 10 times out of 10 to manage my team over Mang. Mang is a disaster with the bullpen. One of the worst bullpen managers that we've seen here. Like he has done and again, caveat, I get it. He has absolutely nothing to work with. It's not like there are right decisions to be made, but I have not liked the way he's managed Ben. And even more so, I haven't liked the Harper Mattingly thing. I mean, to your point, we talked about this on the morning show, but Harper comes out a few days ago with The Athletic, does an article saying, yeah, it hurts when I'm in the outfield, when I have to run certain ways or make certain moves. I feel it. I'll power through. I'm doing the best I can, blah, 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 blah. They asked Mattingly about it yesterday. He's like, hasn't told me about it. I don't know. Maybe, I guess if he's hurt, we shouldn't play him, huh? It's like this adversarial thing between them. And it happened before the deadline with the whole, like, well, Bryce should shut up, essentially, comment. And after Bryce was like, we need help. Or then a couple days later, Mang's like, we could use some relievers, which I get. But it just feels like there's an adversarial thing between Bryce and Mattingly. It feels like there's an adversarial thing between Dombrowski and Harper. Like, it does not, like, we talked 2022, part of why that felt so special, that was because even though it happened late, the team all coalesced together and everything was good vibes. And it was like, it felt like they were having fun playing and they loved each other and this and that and all that stuff. Like, I don't get any of that. I get the exact opposite, both from the front office coaching staff and the players. I just get, like, hate is not the right word, but like contention, I think, is the right word.
Yeah.
And there's no harmony with this team. It just feels like I don't. And again, it can happen. They can go on a run. It just seems so far-fetched right now, Tuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, what's funny is if they were still competing, because I think a lot of people kind of always compare this group and what they've done to the previous successful regime, right? Like, and what they did in 07 to 11.
And 76 to 83 or whatever, you know?
This might be 2012. Like, this might be the team just running out of gas. Yeah. And you don't want to say that.
Which was our fear heading into the season, Tuck. I mean, Jack and I talked about that on this podcast.
It was like, definitely the fear a possibility.
Is 2012, yeah.
And the fear is, and the worry is, were they good enough or too good for a 6-week stretch between May and June?
Yeah.
To where you gave the front office and the manager hope and belief that, you know, you actually are, you know, staving off those demons and those ghosts for another few months and can make a run in the postseason. And unfortunately, that might not be the case. And you know, you kind of look down the line.
Before you go on, real quick, just to add to that, I agree with you, and I think that's part of what happened, but I also that does not absolve Dave Dombrowski. When Dave Dombrowski comes out after the deadline and says, well, Brian De La Cruz earned it. That guy earned it with 23 at-bats as a Philly before the deadline. He earned right-handed playing time. Like, that kind of, when saying Andrew Painter off one start after being in the minors, coming back and he has one decent start in Baltimore and being like, well, he proved that he could do this, and he might be able to, and I want Painter there. Like, ultimately, honestly, it's probably more important to develop Painter than it is to make a run, because it's probably not going to happen. But like, we predicted that. We said they're going to say these things. Like, these guys we know are not answers, are good enough answers, and maybe they come through and you never know and play or whatever, but like I think that that's part of it, Tucker. But I think the Dave Dombrowski's job as the president of baseball operations of this team is to not get hoodwinked by that, is to not allow 23 at bats of Brian De La Cruz to say, you know what, that's our right-handed bat, we found him, you know, like, he,
by the way, Brian De La Cruz has one start since Elise Verizes got here. Uh-huh. He started one game. He earned it, and he's been on the bench ever since.
And they got to have freaking Alec Boehm in the lineup. The guy, God forbid, the guy who's not going to be here next year has to be in the, like, that is the thing that infuriates me the most. And then on top of that, also, can we just real quick, and I'll get back to you. I'm sorry I interrupted you. But, like, also the idea that Luis Rice just comes here and gets to play second base because he wants to. Like, he is so clearly not as good a second baseman as Bryson Stott. He does not get to balls that Stott got to, like, clearly. But, he wants to play it, like, and even if you put him in second base, there was a better solution by not keeping Boehm on the field. Like, there were so many ways they didn't have to do this dancing, you know, musical chairs, everyone's moving every, and then Bryce Harper's in right field, and his knees are freaking shot.
I will say Bryson Stott's a much better third baseman than Alec Boehm.
Way so better. But it is
fun that Trey Turner doesn't have to field so much and cover so much ground on that side of the infield.
True.
But it, you know, all of this I think goes back to, and I know what podcast this is, and I know whose chair I'm sitting in, so I don't want to compare the Phillies to the Eagles, but you kind of look at the way Howie Roseman runs that franchise and the way Dave Dombrowski has. The Eagles are always a step ahead or two steps ahead. The Phillies feel like they're two steps behind with everything they do. They feel reactionary. They feel like, oh, man, who could have seen this coming? Okay, I guess we have to do this now. And they keep painting themselves into to corners like this to where, oh, man, you know, who would have thought that, you know, Brad Keller, who had one decent year, wouldn't be the guy to be the eighth inning dude. And, you know, unfortunately, we gave him $20 million and he's probably never going to pitch for this franchise again. Right. Like, who could believe that Adolis Garcia, who, you know, it sucks he got hurt because he was playing a little bit better. But who can believe a guy whose numbers have gone down so much in the last 2 years isn't going to be the answer in right field
in the sport the last year? Like, come on.
Like, I'm all for taking reclamation projects and I'm all for, you know, trying to find diamonds in the rough, because that was one of the things that saved the 08 Phillies, right? Like, finding someone like Shane Victorino's a Rule 5 pick, drafting or signing Jason Worth after he was given up on by the Dodgers because of his wrist injuries, right? So I get it. And, like, you have to do that, but it just feels like they're never proactive with addressing anything. And, you know, outside of maybe the Lizardo deal to, like, really strengthen their rotation and, you know, get that done before Nola started to fall off a cliff last year, I just can't point to many moves where it's like, man, he really saw this coming and was able to get out ahead of it, because most of the problems become really obvious on the field before they're ever addressed.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly starts, and advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's such a great point. And we're not even talking about the lack of depth on the team. I mean, we're just talking about a starting lineup that they can't fill adequately. I mean, what if someone gets hurt? What if they lose someone for a period of time? I mean, you talked about those three pitchers. It really is like, we talk about, oh, they could go on a run, and they could, but only if those three pitchers are good.
Zach Wheeler can use 2 weeks off more than like anybody in the world. And unfortunately, you know, bud, you got to take the day ball every fifth day.
Because they are not a playoff team today. You know, exactly. You know, Wheeler could use time off. Duran, I'm sure by the end of the season. I mean, how much are you going to rely on that guy in the playoffs? What's he going to have in the tank? Bryce Harper could use some time off. Kyle Schwarber could probably use some time off. I mean, it is really, it's a great point, Tucker, in that, like, they could go on a run. And you're right in reality in that, I think that was, you know, most Phillies fans hope to have a good team going into playoffs, but I think at the end of the day, we're all just kind of hoping they got hot at the right time, but you hope it's a better team that gets hot at the right time. Now it feels like the way they're playing and with the lack of talent and the holes that they have in major parts, especially the bullpen. I mean, it's one thing to think, all right, Harper and Schwarber and Marsh and Stott and Arise can get hot for 3 weeks and month in the playoffs. Like, that is something where it's like, you're not expecting all those guys, but for games and a two a game and three a game or whatever, like, sure, I can paint a picture where that's possible. I can paint a picture where Zach Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez and Jesus Lizardo are great in the playoffs. Like, I can see that. I can't get there with the bullpen. I can't, because they don't even have, like, I can't see Painter coming in and being some shutdown reliever of them. I don't think they have the starters to move over. Like, I don't know how they figured that out for four rounds of the playoffs against, let's just say, the Braves, the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Rays or the whoever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that plays out in any possible way where they can actually go on a run.
Maybe you sign David Robertson.
That's it.
That's been the answer before. It'll always be the answer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you look at what this team has and the depth they have, and you're right. Like, could they get hot? Sure. But it makes me think a lot about when they lost to the Mets in the playoffs. And I was like, well, the offense might not be great, but at least we have great pitching, or at least we have great starting pitching. We have a great bullpen, right? Like, you need kind of two of those three units to be clicking to have the ability to win. Cause the bullpen wasn't great in 2022, right? Like, you relied on,
it really was like
really Eflin, Dominguez and Alvarado, and then still Suarez had to come in and save the day, right? Like, but you had great starting pitching, and your lineup absolutely mashed for three rounds of the playoffs, and you kind of got around it. I just don't see that happening this time. Like, I don't see, like, couldn't you see them losing 2-0 in the wild card game, and Wheeler throws 7 shutout innings?
Of course.
And Boland gives up a home run. Like,
dude, I had to predict right now, like, first of all, I don't know that they'll make the playoffs. You look at, we'll go through it, but the schedules don't play out well for them. But if they make the playoffs, like my prediction, like right now, what if I had to bet my life or bet in my house on how does this Phillies season play out? I would bet they lose in the wild card round. That'd be my bet. Whether it's to the Brewers, whether it's the Cubs or the Braves, I think they lose two of three in one of those spots. Which is funny because
you would argue a shorter series with only three games would favor the Phillies, right? It would maximize their biggest strength, which right now is the top end of their starting rotation. But you're right. Like the schedule isn't super easy. You have three more against St. Louis next weekend, who, you know, you just had issues with.
I'll go through the schedule for sure.
I hate being pessimistic. I hate being sad. I hate being frustrated about the Phillies, but I just don't know what there is to be positive about, because you watch them and it's the same problems over and over again. They don't play crisp baseball. They've never necessarily been a fundamentally sound team, but they've always been talented enough and they've hit enough to kind of get around it. But you aren't even getting that this year. Like the only thing that it seems like anyone's striving for right now is Bryce Harper trying to play all 162 games. Like that's the only goal you have.
And it's like, I'm happy for him and I get it, but like really, really?
Yeah, I mean, like Schwarber's not getting 50 now. Like he's only at 35. He's had five home runs since July 1st.
And should Bryce play 162? Is that a good
probably
thing?
Not.
You know, exactly.
It feels like he decided, like, well, I can't be elite like Dave said. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go out and play all 162 and try and be a warrior that way. Which like I do appreciate.
I do too. You know, again, I'm not minimizing
all over Bryce. Like there is something to be said about you going out and, you know, taking the field and standing in the batter's box for all 162 games, especially in your 15th year in the majors. Like, I do think that is somewhat impressive.
An accomplishment or whatever. Yeah.
But like, you're also hitting .254 with an .870 OPS right now. Like, you're not exactly putting up the numbers you put up earlier in your career when you first got to Philadelphia. This team's desperate for either a star or somebody to really be a difference-making player, especially in the top of that lineup. And they just haven't gotten that in a really, really long time. And Arise looked like he might have been that for a week, but
he infected kind of him.
Well, do you know his career OPS in the month of August is .650?
I saw that tweet, and I thought that was fascinating from you. It's like, just get to September.
It's like between .790 and .830 for every month, except for August is .650.
It's a really strange thing.
If this is a rental, Dave, you didn't know that?
Yeah.
You traded your third best prospect for a guy who you're only going to get 1 month of real production out of? And if you asked him that, he would obviously laugh and say, well, there's no way.
That doesn't matter. Yeah. And yes, exactly.
I get it. But he is brutal to watch when the soft little bloopers aren't falling in.
Yeah. And look, I think I brought this up on the last pod, and I don't know what – I think a lot of people, when they traded for Rise, were like, well, think about this. You know, fly ball rates up. He's in that huge park in San Francisco. He's going to be hitting the ball out of Citizens Bank Park. Wrong. And I was like, oh, I guess that makes a little sense, whatever. I didn't think it would be a lot more, whatever. But that was the wrong analysis. The real analysis is that the 40% you know fly ball rate combined with the smaller outfield, he's going to get less hits. And that's what we're
funny,
seeing.
And I said something to Jack about
outfield
it.
Outfield in San Francisco, like that ball drops, man.
When I think I saw Jack at the Phillies game last week, and I talked to him about it again a little bit later. Like, I don't think people realize how softly Luis Arraez hits the ball. Like he swings hard, but people don't realize how soft his exit velo is, which is fine. Like he's been an incredibly productive hitter. Right, that's who he is. It's fine, but it's hilarious to watch in person when he hits those fly balls. The entire crowd stands up and gasps, like this is going to be 450 feet. And it's a lazy fly ball to the warning track. It happened like seven times when I was at the stadium last week when he made his debut at home. It's just, it's funny to watch because he's such a different profile than the guys who hit in front of him. Right? Like if Schwarber connects,
and
like
not
that
just the guys, the guys that we've had here, period, for this run. Like he is such a different hitter than they've had here, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you need that. Like I really think they've needed someone like that. Like I think swapping out someone like Gene Segura and his hitting profile for someone like Trey Turner, who's such a big swing and miss guy, was probably a little bit of a miscalculation just as far as, you know, lineup construction goes, because they've missed a guy who, and I think Justin Crawford's been this way this year, because I think he's been really good in big situations.
He should follow Arise around like a little baby. Like that, like Luis Arise is the top with speed is the top version of what Justin Crawford can be. That's the type
and I think what he's done in big situations with runners in scoring position has been huge, because he just puts the ball in play. Like he'll hit a hard ground ball right by the first baseman. He'll put pressure on the defense with the speed. And that's something you need in the postseason, because in those games where Schwarber's 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts and Harper's not hitting home runs, guess what? You need a guy who's coming up with a man on second and 2 outs who can just loop a ball over the right, first baseman's head into right field and score you a run. Like, you need the ability to score dirty runs like that. And I think they finally have a couple guys who can do it. It's just, is it too little too late? Because who knows if they have enough of the other stuff to where that's even going to matter.
Yeah. And then even then, when Bohm and JT, and you have no right-handed power, no right-handed thump behind those guys, I mean, it's just an easy lineup to move around. And to your point, I mean, you hit on, it's not like breaking news, but Trey's the thing that fouled this whole thing up. You know, it's when you pay $300 million and close to $30 million a year for a guy, and he's supposed to be your big right-handed bat, and he isn't, and he is what he is. And not just that, to your point, like last year, it worked better because at least he was willing to say, all right, I'm just going to put the ball in play. And to your point, put pressure on the defense with my speed, with me being on base, just causing problems. And even if 305 is a weak batting title, he still batted 305 last year. What I don't understand is he had that success with that last year and then reverts back to this hitter he was before, even though it was so clear that worked better last year, which is infuriating. But Trey Turner, I mean, he's the crux of the problem. He really is.
Yeah, I mean, even in 2024, he hit 290. And yeah, it's funny, like, you look at his strikeouts, he struck out 107 times last year. He struck out 98 times in 2024. Like, that's fine. Like, he was an all-star. He was a top five MVP candidate. Struck out 150 times or 15 times already this year.
Wow.
Like, he has more strikeouts than he did a year ago. His OPS is 120 points lower than what it was the last 2 years, because he was at like 810 each of the previous 2 years. I mean, he just hasn't been a productive baseball player. And the fact that, you know, his defense on top of it has been such a sieve on that side of the infield. I mean, it's just, if he were even close to what he was a year ago, I don't even know how many more wins they have, right? Like, if they just had another guy at the top of the lineup to where the pressure wasn't so much on Harper or Schwarber to get it done. I mean, you really got hot with three guys, right? Like, Harper, Schwarber, and Marsh carried this lineup through, you know, the heart of the season, where you really clawed your way back into it and went from being the worst team in baseball to two games behind the Braves. And now that those guys have cooled off and are, you know, producing at a more normal rate, you don't really have anybody taking over. Like, Stott's been really good since the All-Star break.
He's been great. He's been
not necessarily a difference-making guy. Like, I don't know what they have right now. And we know the names, and we know what they're capable of doing, but they're also all older. Like, they're also...
I said this in the offseason. This is part of my thing. Everyone's a year
like,
older,
is it crazy to expect a group of guys who are all 33, 34, 35, 36, like... Maybe probably they can't all play 162 days. Maybe the reason why they're falling apart in mid-August is because they've had to be clawing every day since mid-April just to get to where they are, and now they've just simply run out of gas.
Yeah, and look, I think Schwarber in the home run derby and all these things, and I had to do it, but look at one and then the other. I think it absolutely played a role, whether it's the back thing, whether he's out of whack. And without Schwarber hitting home runs, they just don't have it. I mean, they can't win without him. He is so important as, like, the only true power threat they have. You know, it's – and again, I like small ball. I love having Luis Rice here. Like, you can't win if you don't hit home runs. I'm sorry. I know people love to say, oh, you just got to hit the ball around. And like, you have to hit home runs. You have to. That's the way the game
is. And those aren't good enough at small ball to do it. Like, well, you don't too. Have Luis Rice. It's like, all of a sudden, the one thing we couldn't do for the last 5 years, we're not going to be able to do.
If you're the Tampa Bay Rays, whose whole identity this year has been small ball, they have actually, like, Phillies fans would love them. They literally built a team to hit the ball on the ground and get hits and steal bases and run and play great defense. Yeah. If you build your team that way, fine. If you bring in one guy to add to a bunch of guys who don't do that, probably not going to work, you know? All right, let's get to the schedules before we get out of here. I know it hasn't been the most fun pod, but, like, we got to call it and we see it. I mean, I think everyone's really down on this team right now, and I think it's justified. So, obviously, the scary part about the standings right now, the Marlins are only two games back of them, the Cardinals 2.5, and then they're tied with the Diamondbacks and the Padres. The Padres have one game up on them now. Padres have won like 15 and 19 or something like that. I mean, you look at the run differentials just to begin with. I mean, the Phillies are still at -7. The Marlins are +11. The Nats are +16. The Pirates are +25. I mean, that's just a concern overall. But you look at the schedules, Tucker, The Diamondbacks, I think, have the easiest schedule left of the three. They have a couple tough games to start. They got the Cubs here, but they've got San Francisco left. A four-gamer in San Francisco, that's huge. Biggest series of the season for the Phillies is going to be in Arizona, the 31st through the 2nd. That's going to be absolutely massive for the Phillies in a head-to-head. But like the Diamondbacks still have three in Kansas City. They're home against Texas, who is competing, but it's nothing crazy. They've got Miami. They finish out with three in Colorado and then three against San Diego, which could help because, you know, someone has to win. The Padres have they got Cleveland now. They got the Mets in Minnesota and Pittsburgh, which is a nice stretch. Tampa Bay's tough. They got Cincinnati's pretty easy. They got some against Washington. They have three more against San Francisco and four more against Colorado. So those seven games are huge for them. Plus another three against Miami. They do finish hard against the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. But listen to this for the Phillies. They have a nice stretch now with this Minnesota, Miami, and Miami again swept them last time. But Minnesota, Miami. Then they got the Cardinals again who are fighting with them. Seattle in it in the West. They've got the Angels, a three-game series at the end of August versus the Angels, which will be big. But listen to this last month for the Phillies, Tucker. They start the month with that big game, three-game series against Arizona. Then
right.
Four at home against the Braves. That is obviously tough. Three at home against Houston, which is, you know, they haven't been great, but still they're not a pushover. Then they're
in first
three...
place, technically.
Yeah. Are they back in first? Okay. So, yeah, with a
60 and 62 in first place.
There you go. So, but they'll be fighting. Then three in Atlanta again. So, you got 7 out of 10 games against Atlanta. Then two against Washington, four against the Mets. That's the only six games you can kind of feel okay about. And then they finish with three versus Milwaukee and three versus Tampa. I mean, the only hope with those last six games is that those teams have wrapped up their positioning in playoffs. But with the way the AL East is playing, I don't think that'll happen with Tampa. With Milwaukee, depends if they're still fighting for that top seed. That is possible.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay is six games up on the Yankees right now. So
are they six? I didn't guys say it's separated so much. Okay, so that Tampa series, you could at least potentially get a team that might not. But what about
also points back to how they won in 22? Right, like they went to Houston. Houston
they
had
were
nothing.
They were the six seed.
They were the six seed, and Houston had nothing going on. Like Houston had clinched the division. They were You're good right. to go. And I don't want to say they rolled over because they kicked the Phillies' ass the next day with the Ranger Suarez hangover.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Nola was perfect through like six and two thirds. Yeah. Right. And,
six
you know,
two
you,
thirds
you,
even. Yeah.
And yeah, Schwarber hit two home runs, I think. And like that was the win. And that's how you did it. And it felt soft at the time, but didn't matter. And it kind of set off maybe the greatest month of Phillies baseball we've seen in, I don't know, maybe ever, just as far as vibes go. But yeah, I mean, you look at what this team has ahead of them. It's not easy. And, you know, you hate to beat a dead horse and go back, but the way they started the season going 9-19 and getting Rob Thompson fired, like, unfortunately, when you do that, and I know they erased it,
right?
Like, that immediately cuts out kind of any sort of wiggle room, right? Like if they just went 500 and then they got hot and now they're back to being mediocre again, well, at least
they'd
you have
easily
that
be in a playoff spot right now,
right?
If
like,
they had done that,
like,
yeah.
You could go 9-19 right now, and it would be like, well, okay, like it sucks, but you kind of figure it out. Like the fact that you dug yourself such a deep hole early in the season and you had to climb out of it the way you did, unfortunately, like you don't have the luxury to take weeks off or a month off the way a team like the Dodgers do, right? Like they lost 7 in a row, but guess what? It doesn't matter because they're still 8.5 games up on the Padres because they take care of business and they can rest like 4/5 of their starting rotation for half the year. Because all they care about is October and they know they have enough organizational depth to get them through the regular season. Like yep. You don't have that luxury right now. Like you didn't build a team strong enough and you didn't start out good enough to where you can do that, to where in the dog days of August, you can sit there and say, you know what? We're getting this guy a break. We're getting this guy a breather. We're going to skip a start for him. We're going to let him take a weekend off because unfortunately the way you started didn't afford you that luxury.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Tuck. You said it perfectly, especially if you're infuriating when you think about them just saying, well, we're just kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. It's like, well, waiting for the shoe to drop might have cost you a playoff spot and potentially the end of this era of Phillies baseball. Who the hell knows where it goes from here? So, look, they have 40 games left to change this thing around. I will end with the positivity in that even though it feels hard to believe that it could happen, I guarantee you if you take us back to September 15th, of 2022, it would have felt just as impossible. Maybe the team was better. I think that team was better, but it would have in the moment felt just as impossible. And you can make a case where they might have a better three if those guys are on right now. They do have a better starting three with the pitchers. They do have a better reliever than they had then. In Duran is better than, you know, Seranthi was pretty great that year, but you know what I mean? Like Alvarado is pretty great that year, but Duran is lights out. They do have, you know, they added a rise. Stott is hitting. Like, could Harper and Schwarber and Marsh get hot again? Added to a rise, added to Stott. Like, there is a formula. There is a path because it's baseball, because the playoffs are absolute chaos and things happen. Again, the Dodgers came really damn close to not winning the World Series last year. It took Miguel freaking Rojas hitting the biggest home run of the season. You know, like sometimes that happens. So they can do it. It's just we really need to see this 40 games. They need to turn around quick. And it's going to be a high bar to clear. But let's hope for the best. Look, it starts tonight. It starts Field tonight. Dreams. We're going to look back like we look on London ruining that season. Field of Dreams game liftoff. Let's go.
Some soggy corn out there in Iowa.
It's going to be great. All right, coming out tonight, Lascaux's Fire. I have my freaking baseball trivia questions. It's going to be awesome. So much fun. So coming out. That's tonight, Lascaux's Fire in the Northeast. Fritz and I will be there watching the game. It's going to be so much fun. And obviously, we'll be back after the weekend series. Thank you to Tucker filling in for Fritzy right now. Just a home run job from Tucker. The best. We'll be back. Yeah, I think he did great.
Soft double. A Castellanos double down the line.
don't do that to yourself. All right. We'll be back after the weekend. So until then, I was about to say he's Fritz, I'm Seltzer. He's Bagley, I'm Seltzer.
I wish.